Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, Episode 109, and this morning the Steelers are at the UPMC Rooney Southside facility, the first day of the Steelers rookie minicamp, Dave. And, of course, I'm not there because not a lot goes on at these things. It's guys running around and getting acclimated and getting orientated, and they will have OTAs, and then we'll have the mandatory mini camp about a month from now, and then a little time off. But the culmination of things, it really kind of ends with the draft, and now we kind of have a general sense of the 90 guys who are going to go to camp with the Steelers.
Yeah, and one interesting aspect about the rookie mini camp that Bob Labriola reported just the other day is that Cinquez Golson is not eligible to take part in the rookie minicamp, and that's too bad. You know, I think the NFL needs to look at the rules associated with that, because, and I'm guessing it's because he got an accrued season because he was on the team's reserve injured list for the entire 2015 season. But in my opinion, they need to change that, because, I mean, let's face it, the kid only got to take part in OTAs and the rookie mini camp last year, but that was it. You know, I think for rookie players, if they spend the entire season on the reserve injured list or on PUP or what have you, they ought to let those guys, you know, participate in the next year's rookie mini camp. But outside of that, you know, obviously no surprises. All the draft picks, all the undrafted free agents, you know, several first year players who don't have accrued seasons in the NFL are allowed to participate. And I think the number sits at what, 53 or 54 players, somewhere around there, that are going to participate in the festivities this weekend.
Yeah. So Dave, we talked about this in the last podcast, and I haven't spent a lot of time looking at the undrafted free agents and a group of guys that are coming in. I know you've spent a fair bit of time now over the last week, basically, trying to get familiar with some of these guys. We talked about the punter, the kid from Duke, Monday, who's going to compete for the punting job. Did anybody else, when you got a chance to look at tape of some of these guys, did anybody else jump out at you as a guy who was kind of interesting, who maybe deserves? You mentioned there's a couple tight ends as well.
Yeah. DJ Reeves and Rome out of Georgia. I can tell you who the Steelers probably view as the priority undrafted guys for starters, and that's just by looking at the signing bonuses given to a few of these. I've got a total of about four of them that we already know about. Tyreek McCord was given a $7,000 signing bonus, and that's fairly high. And I think his name is Quentin Schooley, an interior offensive lineman, I believe, out of is it North Carolina State? I'm drawing a blank. I think it's North Carolina State. Quentin Schooley, he was given a $4,000 signing bonus, so that's a little bit higher. Reeves and Rome were both.
It's so funny when we talk about these guys getting $4,000 and $7,000, and other guys getting, you know, $7 million. I mean, it's just, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, of course, the full list of the signing bonuses hasn't been released yet, and there might be one or two of these guys that got, you know, $10,000. Usually, right around $10,000 to $15,000 is usually the highest when it comes to Steelers undrafted free agents. But you know, the McCord kid, that's a guy that's interesting, because when you look at go back and look at his Miami tape, played off the ball quite a bit, lined up out in the slot, covering some guys a few times, lined up on the line. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what you know, what the Steelers think of him as, because, you know, I think he's right around 6'4", you know, around that height and all, and you just look at his measurables and all, and you say, okay, well, he's probably going to be an outside linebacker. But if you remember Terrence Garvin a few years ago, ended up being more of an inside guy. So it'll be interesting to see where McCord lands. Up on Steelers Depot as of just about an hour or so ago, we have Luke Polgaze has already done his scouting report on Devontae Siegler, a defensive lineman out of Jacksonville State. Interesting prospect, 6'3.5", 298 pounds. Obviously, probably going to project as more of a five tech guy. Of course, coming out of a Jacksonville State, a small school, there's a whole competition thing that he faced, but, you know, an intriguing prospect to say the least. But, you know, outside of maybe the kid that we talked about, the receiver out of Virginia, Severin, you know, really, you know, not a lot of big names, if you ask me. And of course, if any of these guys are going to end up making the 53-man roster this year, one would think it would be a guy that could contribute on special teams.
Yeah, that's always, you know, look, that's always the way we see these guys occasionally flash and really either at the end of the mini camp or in the early part of training camp. And, you know, last year, we go back to guys like Howard Jones a couple of years ago, Adrian Robinson, guys who got noticed. The Dangerfield, the kid got noticed, the DB, he's still around. You got Chickalo last year was a guy who got noticed early. You know, we'll see how it all plays out. Again, we feel like, and I think we were a little bit more wrong than usual last year, Dave, you feel like when you go to camp, when the Steelers open in Latrobe, that you can write down 48 names as locks for the roster, maybe 49, and then you've got 10, 15 guys battling for 3 to 5 spots, whatever it may be, and then the practice squad. It feels that way this year, certainly on the offensive side of the ball. It would be a bit of a surprise. I think the only, you know, if you assume Fitzgerald Toussaint's going to make the squad, and you say, okay, the sixth-round pick seventh-round pick Ayers is going to be he's a borderline guy as a punt returner receiver. So maybe there's a spot there versus a backup tight end with a Xavier Gimble type. There are not many spots. I mean, the offensive line, we can write down the 8 names on the offensive line. Ryan Harris is going to be there. The fourth-round pick is going to be there. You know, who's the guy who played center? I'm drawing a blank. Nasty dude who filled in for Pouncey.
Oh, Cody Wallace.
Cody Wallace is going to be there. So, you know, you've got those guys, and, you know, you wonder what that means for B.J. Finney.
Well, you would think there's – at most this team's going to keep 10 offensive linemen. 9 to 10 offensive linemen is probably what you're thinking about.
I'd be shocked if there were 10.
I won't be shocked, you know, especially when you consider that how many tackles, you know, when you consider Gerald Hawkins is
Hawkins, Harris, Wallace, and
no, I'm talking about tackles.
No, but
though.
I'm not talking about backup linemen. Hawkins, Harris, Wallace, and give me one more.
Well, you're probably going to need another guard,
yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah. Who was it last year?
Well, you're either Hubbard or Finney, right?
Hubbard, yeah. So I'm guessing that's your 9.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how that backup guard spot goes, because remember last year B.J. Finney is a guy that they gave a full salary to on the practice squad to keep him from being poached away.
Right.
And when you go back and you look at Chris Hubbard, really has never given you great snaps as a guard, but did get pressed into action some at what tackle, right? So just a few snaps there. I mean, Hubbard really hasn't played a whole lot worth noting in a regular season game, whereas B.J. Finney hasn't played any. But B.J. Finney probably is the better center guard than Hubbard is. So, you know, that's worth watching. And then, of course, we'll see how some of these tryout and undrafted types, you know, like Schooley, who we just mentioned there at top of the show – if any of these guys are able to compete for a spot. But you're right, as far as offense goes, I mean, look, Roosevelt Nix, and look, that's a prime example. Roosevelt Nix is a guy that when he was signed to a futures contract last year, I dismissed it.
Sure. I mean, well, you know, I mean, he was the longest of long shots, a former defensive lineman trying to play fullback. You know, odds were long.
And boy, what a find he ended up being, right? I mean, not only special teams, but the guy's a pretty good skullcracker as far as fullbacks go. So you think, you know, he's going to be a lock to make it. I think you were right to point out the possibility of we'll see how you know a fifth wide receiver spot goes. Is there a guy like Eli Rogers? Is it going to be a guy like Ayers? You know, the seventh round draft pick. You know, that spot's up for, you know, discussion and competition as far as that goes. Tight end, I mean, is Matt Spaeth really a lock?
Yeah, I think tight end's the most interesting position because you've got Ladarius Green and then you've got a lot of fodder behind that. And
one would think Jesse James is a lock.
Yep. He's in, and then it's Spaeth against, and look, because Will Johnson's gone, if they get a hybrid guy, you know, maybe you carry four, depending on how you want to classify a guy, because they're going to carry three for sure. And then if Rosie Nix is your only H-back, fullback type, there is that roster spot that Will Johnson had last year that could be occupied. I think they'll just have three running backs. Although, you know, there was a lot of talk that they were interested in running backs in the draft if they had gotten a fifth-round pick. The belief is that they would have gone quarterback or running back, which I find a little bit fascinating because, you know, I understand D'Angelo Williams is in the last year of his contract and you got to get something done with Le'Veon Bell. But you've got, you know, even in Fitz Toussaint, you've got three guys who are, you know, more than capable. So they'll have a running back on the practice squad, but I don't think there's any room there. But I think you're right at the tight end. There are two guys who are Green and James are guaranteed, and Spaeth, Gimble, the two undrafted free agents will be battling for one or two spots.
And, you know, Fitzgerald Toussaint, I don't know about you, and the fumble aside, which was, you know, pretty much what he's going to be remembered for right now, he played pretty well.
I think he's a lock. I mean, I don't know. I mean, what I'm not sure he's a lock for is getting a helmet on game day, and because I'm not sure what his special teams capabilities are. So, you know, that's debatable, but yeah, I think he proved his worth for sure in the playoffs last year.
I if he can show anything on special teams to Danny Smith here, you know, over the course of the offseason, you really like his chances, because I'll tell you this: if they end up having to part ways with Fitzgerald Toussaint right before the start of the season, it would not surprise me to see him show up on another team's, you know, 53-man roster right after, you know, right at the start of the season. I mean, I think he's got some talent there. He did enough. Like I said, if he doesn't fumble, I think the perception of, you know, from Steeler fans out there would be a little bit different with a few of them. But I really like what he did do when given the opportunity with the football in his hands and also without the football in his hands.
Yeah, okay, so that's the offensive side. On the defensive side, if they're going to add, to me, the one place that they'll be looking when guys are released and guys are cut, I think you're going to agree with me on this, Davis. They're still going to be looking for guys on the defensive line.
Wow. You know, they went out and they signed Ricardo Matthews, right? And if you look at the history of the Steelers when it comes to signing
that type,
you know,
of
other unrestricted free agents during the first meaty part of the offseason, normally those guys stick.
Yes.
And you would think Ricardo Matthews, as we sit here right now, would stick. Now, John Mitchell usually likes to carry six, right? So, you know, I think there's one spot maybe up for grabs. Is it going to be a guy like LT Walton? Is it going to be a guy like Keshad Lyons?
The five guaranteed guys are the two starting ends. Obviously, Hargrave, McCullers are four. If we say Ricardo Matthews is five, then you got LT Walton. Yeah,
Yeah, you got LT Walton. You got Keshad Lyons. You would think would be the front runners. One of those two guys to be number six.
He still feels a little bit lacking in depth there. I can't tell you I know anything about Ricardo Matthews, so that maybe he'll be as productive as.
In my opinion, he's more of a guy that you would rotate in nickel pass rushing situations. You know, I wouldn't feel comfortable out there with him as a five tech.
Yeah.
You know, especially against a run on early downs. He is a guy, though, I think that can get after the quarterback in pass rushing situations. Remember, he's the one that had a sack against the Steelers in that game against the Chargers last year. As well. I mean, trust me, it's not a flashy signing any stretch of the imagination, and they could probably easily upgrade the position. I mean, let's face it, if a team was to part ways with a under 30 five tech with some experience, you know, if they could get him for a cheap 1 year deal, I don't think let's just put it to you this way. More competition would be welcome.
Yeah, in the linebacker situation, the four outside guys are all coming back. You got three inside guys coming back that everybody knows. You got the two draft picks. I feel like Matakeo was talking to Jerry Dulac yesterday on my show, and he said, and it's something, you know, we've all drawn the obvious comparison to Jerry Olsavsky. He said he's just somebody you're going to watch in training camp, and you're just not going to be able to cut him because he's in there making plays all the time. He's obviously going to have to be a special teams player to make it. Matakevich, and then you get the fifth-round pick, Feeney, competing in there and against Chickalo. You know, the question is Feeney big enough to play on the outside? Is he an inside guy? Is he an outside guy? I mean, Dave, you've seen enough tape on him. Do you have a sense? Is he going to be a special teams guy and nothing more, or is he a guy who can get on the field?
Well, you know, he in a radio interview right after the draft, I think he weighed, 230 at the combine, and he admitted he's like 225 right now and wants to get back up to 230 right away.
And he killed the combine, right? I mean, he killed the workouts.
Yeah, I mean, he's got good measurables, and, you know, the reason he probably slipped was the and look, he put up some decent combine numbers, as we mentioned, with a while dealing with a sports hernia. Then he got that sports hernia fixed right after the combine, and of course it cost him being able to do anything at his pro day. But I mean, what, eight sacks at Washington, or eight sacks last year, I think, at Washington. Forget the total that he had during his career at Washington, but he is definitely a guy they consider an outside linebacker prospect. He's had four shoulder surgeries already, and I think that was a knock on him, and I think he admitted that as well, too, in an interview that he gave a radio station in Washington as well. I think they see him as a guy that hopefully can come in and – eventually maybe be, who knows, a starter would be best case scenario. Worst case would be a guy that you can get rotated in there. But more than anything, like several of these other guys, you know, making the team as a special teams contributor. And I forget the amount of, was it 29 special teams tackles? It seems like Colbert tell you, one of the interviews that I listened to, I think Colbert talked about the special teams tackles that he had,
yeah.
and it was something like 29 or so. So a little light in the britches definitely has to work on completely defeating his blockers, in the pass rush. But nice measurables, and we'll see where it goes.
If you had to guess today on two of three linebackers making the team, and it was the two guys drafted in this draft, Feeney and Matakevich and Chickalo, and you had to guess which two were going to make the team, what would you guess?
Okay, out of Chickalo, Feeney, and Matakevich?
Yeah.
Wow, man, you would think that they're not ready to give up on Chickalo yet, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Chickalo actually did some things on special teams that were okay. I mean, not all three of those guys are going to make the team. I just feel like, again, David, it's hard to take college productivity They obviously like Feeney better than Matakevich. They took him well ahead of him. So they clearly like that guy better coming in. But I just have a feeling that this guy is going to be a demon on special teams. He's going to make the team. And that, so I kind of feel, you know, look, this, I'm just, you know, throwing darts here. So let's not take it too seriously. But I didn't feel like it's going to come down to Feeney and Chickalo.
Feeney and between Feeney and Chickalo, huh?
Yeah.
I would go between Feeney and Matakevich.
Yeah, that's the more likely.
Look, Matakevich is going to be a great story. You're going to be here. In fact, I'm going to probably write about him a little later on today with an interview that he gave Steelers Nation Radio. He knows special teams is going to be his ticket. He's a high effort guy. Doesn't have the athletic ability inside. He made a lot of tackles. Just because a guy makes a lot of tackles, though, doesn't mean he's going to be a great inside linebacker. Because, I mean, there's a whole athletic building, and the tape shows him kind of getting dominated at the second level by some of those guards and tackles coming out to the second level and just getting put on his butt a few times. So he is definitely going to have to be one of those guys running down the field, cracking skulls, and if he can do that, then he'll find his way onto the roster. So I'm leaning toward, and the thing is too, there's so much that we don't know about Chickalo right now. Now I will say this about Chickalo, he was better on special teams last year than I thought he would be when given the opportunity. Now of course I have to take that a step further this year. But when you talk about depth at the outside linebacker position past the first four, what is there? And you would think that they would like a fifth if possible. So in my opinion, I can't see both Feeney and Chickalo making it. So I think one of them do, and then it comes down to, I don't know.
So you talked yourself back into where I was, I think.
Yeah, I guess so. Here's the thing: we don't know what kind of, and I think it's too early to say. Well, position flexibility between a guy like Feeney, really, there's no way that plays into the equation, because I mean, what's the odds of you having to use a guy like Feeney inside?
Yeah, the UCLA kid's gone, right?
Zumwalt's going to have his work cut out for him.
But he's coming to camp. He's on the roster still.
Yeah, he's still on the roster. Remember, Mike Tomlin calls him Money Pit because they just keep throwing money at him and yet get anything return out of him.
So he's in the conversation. I mean, look, he was the sixth round pick 2-3 years ago. This will be his third year. We've seen very little of him, but he's going to compete for that. And he was probably considered a little bit like Matakevich. I mean, that kind of guy who could help you on special teams. So I don't know if being around the system for 2 years is going to help him and give him some kind of inside track to that, but we probably shouldn't ignore him in that conversation.
And let's not forget, we haven't even talked about Steven Johnson, who they signed during the offseason.
Oh, yeah, you know what? And that's exactly the same as Ricardo Matthews. I mean, he's probably going to make the team.
Right, because more than anything, he's a better special teams player than anything else.
Yeah, and so that's your fourth inside guy. And all of a sudden, again, another guy I forgot. So throw that in there. So you've got that, all that competition. We know what's going on. We've talked a ton about the cornerbacks and the safety, so we kind of know what's going on there.
I think you have to throw positions really out when it becomes
right,
you know,
special
when
teams,
it,
yeah.
Well, because it's just going to come down to things that we're – because here's the thing about Matakevich, too, is he hasn't played special teams since his freshman year at Temple. And it's not his fault.
He was too valuable to use that.
Right, he was too valuable. He was starting linebacker for them. So just because he hasn't done it in quite a while doesn't mean he can't do it now. So, you know, you look at a guy like – Feeney and those two definitely better track what each other are doing during practice, even though they play two different positions.
Yeah, everybody's going to be watching those two, and yeah. So you think about it, and then we get into
let's put it to you this way. Both won't make it, right?
Both rookies.
Yeah, both Matakevich and and the likelihood of Maticavage and Feeney both making it is very slim.
No, you would assume one gets to the practice squad, and nobody's going to pick them up when they get cut, so let's not worry about that. So, you know, I would assume one of them is on the practice squad.
So that'll be an interesting battle. Ayers, we know Ayers' path to the 53-man roster goes through the punt return
situation. And if Vegas were putting odds on guys making the roster, you'd go 100%, 100%, 100%, 95%, and then you go you get to Feeney and you get to probably 50%. I go Ayers 30%, and Maticavage, 40%. So I mean, it massive drop off after the first four, and I think Ayers has the toughest path to the roster.
Well,
very clear path, but the toughest path.
Right, exactly. Let's kind of, as we like to do after every draft, David, we always like to kind of theorize how many snaps each player will potentially play during their rookie season. Last year, I was what's that word? I don't even know how to say that word. Wrong on. Some people are not. That's going to go over heads, because of our age now. But Dupree obviously played a lot more snaps than what I thought he would last year. So let's start with Artie Burns and an over under number for amount of snaps he'll play during his rookie season.
We're
going
to get Alan to write these down, right?
Yeah. Well, trust me, I'll read it. We have enough listeners now. They'll be glad to point out
how wrong we are.
300.
Artie Burns.
300.
I was gonna go 240.
Yeah, man, but is 300 a good over under number? Or would you go 240?
Yeah,
is it
no, 300 is probably good over. Let's see, 16 times. I think 300 is too high. That's 18 snaps a game. Because I'm thinking he doesn't get it. Okay, sorry. Let me just take a step back here. Are we counting special team snaps, or are we talking defensive snaps?
No, we're talking defensive snaps.
Yeah, I think 300 is too high. Just because I'm with you, I don't think he gets on the field much in the first. Although you listen to Kevin, and it sounds like, you know, maybe he will. But I don't know. Is he on the field at all the first 4 weeks?
Barring – and we ought to be able to give the barring injury clause here.
Yeah. I think Cinquez Golson's going to play a lot of snaps this year. I mean, I think Cinquez Golson's going to be playing, 800 snaps. So that means there's just less to go around.
Here's the thing. They just didn't, even though Ross Cockrell was thrust right into action last year, he still was forced to rotate with a guy like Antoine Blake.
How many did Cockrell play, do you think? Did he play 500 snaps?
Seems like that was around, I'm trying to think. It seems like I'll pull those up while we talk about the.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you think about it, Boykin didn't play the first 7-8 weeks of the season, and then he got a lot of snaps where he was getting close to 80% of the snaps toward the end of the season in the last couple of games. Cockrell. Cockrell was there early. I mean, as early as the San Diego game. I mean, he was getting snaps that matter, but he was probably only getting 20 a game, and I don't think he ever probably played 60 snaps a game. But I'm guessing he was to the point. I'm guessing he played 500 snaps on the season. That kind of feels like the right number.
682.
Okay. So he. How much is he going to play, Golson and Gay? So, I don't know. I think Artie Burns, let's say 10 snaps a game is 160. 15 is 240. I can't see him playing 15 snaps a game because I don't see him playing the first 4 or 5 weeks or 6 weeks. So, I think 200. I'd go 200 instead of 300.
So, we'd both go under 300 then?
Yes.
So put us down between 200 and 260.
Yeah, that's good for me.
I think I'll go that way with you as well, too. Sean Davis.
I'd just go a tad over 300. I don't know if he, I think Golden starts the season as a guy, but I could see Davis playing, I'd go 450. Because I could see him playing 50 snaps a game toward the end of the year.
What's a good over-under number for him? 400?
Yeah, 400, 450, yeah. I'll take over 400.
You know, it'd be interesting, too, to see because of his ability to potentially, you know, he'll obviously be considered a strong safety his rookie season, a guy that you hope you can match up, you know, in the slot on top of everything else. And the fact that I just have a feeling we're going to see some more, you know, three safety type sub packages.
Yeah, big nickel type or three safeties instead of three corners. Yep, I could see that.
You know, because of his versatility, I really think there's a chance of him hitting that over 400 number, in my opinion. So I would go over 400. I think there's an outside chance that he might sniff 500.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yes, I agree.
All right, that brings us to Javon Hargrave. Should we start an over-under? Is 500 too high?
Yeah, maybe because of just because of the positioning. I'm thinking he plays
500.
15 to 20.
I think 500 is too high.
Yeah, too high. 20 snaps a game is 320. So I think 20 snaps a game, 20 to 25 snaps a game is where you'd be. So 350 maybe is where I'd draw the over-under.
I would go – wow, this is going to be a tough one. It's all about how fast he can get on the field in some of those nickel sub packages, I think. I think it's obvious at some point he's going to overtake, if not start his season, be the starting base nose tackle. It's a matter of when, not if, with him. But with that said, being as how much they play sub package, wow. What where'd you draw the line? 350.
350.
I'm gonna go under 350.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be right there. But I guess 15 to 20 snaps a game. So 20 would be 320, so I'll go under as well. But I think that's a good number. That's the number I'm most confident about.
Yeah, I'm with you because look, I mean they could do something. You know, they could try to just get Burns on the field and have him go through growing pains sooner rather than later.
What's his name?
Hawkins.
Over under
zero.
One. Over under one.
Okay, over under with Hawkins should be set at one, and I'll take the under.
Me too.
Okay,
and we covered the other guy, so that's, you know, they got to make.
Yeah, I mean, those guys got to make the team, and for any of them to have to get snaps. I think a guy like Feeney, maybe if he made the team, would stand the best chance of maybe sniffing 50 throughout the season, you know, but outside of that. All right, for those of you that want to agree or disagree with some of those over-under numbers that we threw out there, I think we lean more to the conservative side a little bit this year. Email us, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. David, I guess we should get to some news that came out on Thursday, and that was the release of Mike Adams after he failed his physical. And
you guys had a good conversation. It took us back to, you know, you and I talking about him after the draft, and your analogy was so good. It stuck in both our minds about his toolbox and the tools being scattered on the yard across the lawn, and he just couldn't put them together. And he never got the tools in the toolbox, and it was an apt analogy, and you were dead on.
Yeah, and I hate being right about certain things. Like I'm on record as not liking that pick immediately after it was made. However, I will say this about Mike Adams: there was a stretch I remember writing, and I remember us talking about it. A stretch of about five games. Was it his second season, 2013?
Yes, he won the job. He won the job in training camp. People are going to forget this. In 2013, he was a starting tackle.
Well, I mean, no, wait. Because Gilbert had an injury, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was that stretch of games that Marcus Gilbert was injured. I think it was, you know, where he was asked to play right tackle Oh, I'm trying to remember those set of games. I know, I think one of them was against the Giants there, but I remember tracking those run snaps and runs to the right side with Mike Adams at right tackle, and thinking, okay, well, the run blocking was really sufficient. I'll say this: he gave some good snaps during his career at right tackle. Now, of course,
yeah, he was good. He was good in the run game for a bit there.
Now, if you fast forward to the games that he started at left tackle to open up, what season was that? 2000 and when was the trip to London? That was 2014, right?
Game four, they lost to the Vikings. It was brutal. They couldn't tackle anybody.
And he opened up the first four games of that season, right, as the left tackle?
Yeah, I think maybe that was the year. Yeah, one year he started. He was a starter.
Right, and it was a mess at left tackle.
Yes.
And obviously, after that, they pulled the plug on him, and then that's when Kelvin Beachum took over there. So never was able to get his tools back in his in the toolbox as a left tackle, but was able to provide. And look, how many times do we see him out there as a tight end, a blocking tight end?
Yeah, we did see that 2 years ago. We saw that probably 40 or 50 times.
Now, obviously, had they not had the injuries, that they went through at the tight end position, we would have never seen that. So, there were some decent snaps, I thought, as a blocking tight end during his career. But I mean, as a whole, where would you?
I mean, I did like the question in the Colbert era of these four second round draft picks, Dave. Let me just pull it up here. Who was the most disappointing? Mike Adams, Lymus Swede, Alonzo Jackson, or Ricardo Coakley? I mean, it's obviously the answer is not Mike Adams. Because you got two guys on the backside of that. I mean, Alonzo Jackson was a disaster.
Yeah, that was a train wreck, and he was gone, after two seasons?
Yeah, I don't even remember. I was wondering if he made the roster even the first season. I'm sure they kept him around. Yeah, but he was gone the second training camp.
Here's the thing about Mike Adams. He dressed for 41 games, regular season games, and started 20 of them. So you got, and we already talked about he did give some quality snaps at right tackle. So you can throw him out. Boy, Lymus Swede, what a train wreck that was.
The dropping the ball against Baltimore in the end zone and lying on the ground for 30 seconds was. That's his legacy.
Yeah, and if it's not going to be that, it's going to be that drop in the end zone against the Bengals on a deep one as well. That was a bust flat out. Who else did you throw out there?
Ricardo Coakley.
Oh man, I'd rather not go back in time for that one.
What was he like? Third pick in the second round or something? I mean. Did they have a higher pick in that round? I'm trying to, was he just the normal pick?
Oh, I can't remember.
I feel like
back
they moved
then.
Up to get to pick him, but what? Okay, whatever. So anyway, I actually think Mike Adams is probably fourth of four there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can classify him as a bust. A near bust, maybe. And how who knows how it would have been. Wishful thinking, but had he not had that back injury last year, what would his role have been? A swing guy.
Yeah, he would have been a swing guy, and you wonder, if he was healthy, and when Beachum goes down, if he has a chance to be that guy, whether he would have gotten another opportunity.
Yeah, so there's some what ifs attached to him for sure last season, but now okay, he's gone now. Any other final words to put on is Mike Adams going to play another NFL game?
Doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too, especially if he's got a back issue now and being out of the game all that time. He might surface, on an off-season roster if he can get himself healthy again, but to give him any meaningful snaps in a game at this point. Now that Mike Adams has been released, there is one sole survivor from the 2012 draft class, and that is David DeCastro. David DeCastro. When you go back and you look at that draft, it's easy to analyze it and say, well, there's only one left, and it just happened 4 years ago, so it wasn't very good. But
yeah, no, that's not. I mean, obviously DeCastro is a home run. You know, Mike Adams is a disappointment. Sean Spence is just unlucky. I mean, you know, really, you know, he missed 2 years, but he contributed the 2 years he was around, that he was able to play. You know, people talk about, well, he was never the same. I don't know. I don't know that anybody can make that judgment. I don't know that Sean Spence was going to be Ryan Shazier if everything worked out. Unlikely that he was, you know, the athlete Ryan Shazier was, but obviously he had a serious knee injury, so I'm not going to discount that he lost something. But, you know, he played a fair amount. I mean, you know, we saw he and Vince Williams play in all the, you know, with the number of games Shazier's missed the past 2 years. Those guys were on the field a lot. And, you know, he was a good special teams player. So, you know, in terms of value on a third round pick, you probably didn't get quite what you wanted, but, you know, let's put that all on the injury, because, you know, that was not a wasted pick.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you on that. And then if you move on now, Alameda Ta'amu washed out quickly. Chris Rainey
Did they give up on Ta'amu too early?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Rainey's just an all-time knucklehead.
Yeah, knucklehead. Tony, and look, when you talk about guys like Tony Clemens, David Paulson, Terrence Frederick, all those guys were seventh round draft picks. I mean,
and you know, Paulson, as much as you know, I mean, he was
as bad as he was.
He was
stuck.
The 53rd guy on the roster, but he made the roster a couple.
Yeah, years. He played some snaps. Yep. Unfortunately. So, I mean, at least they got something there. Of course, Frederick washed out, Clemens washed out quickly. And then, of course, your final draft pick that year was Beecham. So,
home run.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I wrote on Thursday that the other three seventh-round draft picks are forgivable and forgettable when you consider what they got out of Beecham. So, and I think a reader did this.
Oh, but Paulson's a huge win. You get anybody who plays out of the seventh round, it's a winning pick.
A reader goes by Troy Manian Devil on Steelers Depot commenter, says, let's recategorize the draft this way. DeCastro first round, Beecham second round, Spence third round, Mike Adams fourth round, Rainey fifth round, Ta'amu sixth round, everybody else seventh round. When you look at it that way, it looks like a decent draft.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, I think, you know, I went back and I was doing a show, the auto show, you know, in January, I think it was, when after the season ended, and I had Arthur Motes with me. Before that, I was with Dale, and we classified all the drafts since 2011, and I didn't give any of them below a B. Now, I didn't grade 2015, and obviously we're not great in 2016, but I looked at that draft and I thought it was, I think it's fine. I mean, you look and say you wish you got more out of some of these guys, but when you get Beecham and you get DeCastro and you get Spence, so you've hit on three guys for sure, and you got something out of Mike Adams, you know, that's a reasonable draft.
And let's remember too, if any of those guys were to be still, you know, outside of DeCastro, were to still be on the roster right now, it would be because they got extended, you know. So, you know, how many guys out of each draft class are you actually going to be able to keep past 4 years anyway?
Right. I don't think you look at the second you know, look, when you get a Pro Bowler, when you get an All Pro. You don't guarantee that your draft's good, but it's a damn good start to saying your draft's not bad.
Yeah, and I bet, and it would be a fun study to do, to go back through the entire 2012 draft class league-wide and see how many of those guys still remain on the original rosters.
Right.
You know, and then look at the total amount of snaps they got out of players that they drafted. So I think it's easy to look back and say, well, you know, that draft only happened 4 years ago and only one guy's left on the roster. It must not have been good. But I think we just laid out reasons why it was a decent draft class. And especially, look, I mean, David DeCastro's got a lot of good football, we hope, in him, and could go down as one of the better offensive linemen, you know, the Steelers, you know, quite possibly could have had, you know, have had. Now that's, you know, I'm talking maybe top 20, right? All time lineman.
Yeah, I would bet he's going to be ahead of that. I would think he's got a legit shot of being a top five, top 10.
Does DeCastro have a shot at being a Hall of Famer?
He does, but just it's just so damn tough for guards. I mean, you know, we're going to see Faneca get in here, you know, one of these years. But I think, well, let's put it this way. DeCastro took a big step toward making the Hall of Fame by making the being All-Pro this year. And if he can do that 5 years in a row, then maybe he's a bit like Joe Thomas. I mean, Joe Thomas is going to go in the Hall of Fame, even though he never played for even a reasonably good team. If you lock up All-Pro for your position 5, 6, 7 years in a row, then you're getting in. So that's what DeCastro is going to have to do.
Yeah, he's going to have to string together 4 or 5 good All-Pro seasons here.
Yeah.
And if he does that, then we'll revisit the conversation. So the thing is, now obviously he'll have a contract extension here by the time the 2016 season starts. So we shouldn't have to talk about that guard position for several years when it comes to potentially drafting a spot. Now obviously they'll have to address the spot maybe again as soon as next year, you know, because of Foster on the backside of his career right now. But all right, which way do you want to go?
Well, we got a few minutes left here. Take your pick. I'm good with whatever.
Let's talk a little bit about you had an excellent interview with Kevin Colbert the other day, and the good thing about your interviews, David, is you don't rehash the same stuff that everybody else does. And you know, I kind of had hoped that you would ask about Artie Burns and his lack of playing time at the University of Miami. And what did you? I mean, why don't you kind of recap what Colbert said about that?
That was your idea. It was a good question about Artie Burns playing, you know, 65 or so percent of the snaps. Kevin, you know, what's interesting is Kevin didn't know that number, and I don't have, this is not one iota of criticism of Kevin. They watch the tape. They don't need to watch the snaps he doesn't play. They want to see him when he's on the field, the sense of the guy. I think it was of note that they really put some significance in the fact of the difficulties he went through, with his mother passing away at such a young age in her mid 40s and him having to, you know, take care of his two siblings. That was something they thought was important, and they referenced it multiple times. Kevin referenced it again in the interview. And they saw what they wanted on tape, and there were a couple things that were interesting about the conversation. One is he said, you know, okay, if he played 65% of the snaps, it's even more impressive that he had 6 interceptions. And, you know, he did miss one game, and as the season went on, they used less of a rotation. There was a rotation to start the year. Look, he's a young guy. Artie Burns had played for one season. He's, you know, just getting more experience as they go on. So college coaches are still trying to figure it out with all the guys they have. So as the season went on and he proved himself, he played more. They really liked what they saw on tape. I do think they would have taken William Jackson, and I've had that, you know, confirmed to me to a couple guys, but they weren't at all disappointed that they had Artie Burns. They probably had Jackson slightly higher on the board, maybe a spot higher on the board, but they like what they got. And then, you know, with him, I asked him, you know, when a guy is so young and they talk about, you know, this guy being, you know, bump and run, a press guy, he said, you know, what was interesting about the top corners in the draft is every one of them had a skill that they were exceptionally good at, and they were all different. And his was being a, you know, a bump guy. And I said, you know, look, when you're so young, I assume that if you can do that, you can teach guys other things. And he said, yeah, you know, look, we're going to do what he does. We're going to try and use the skills he has best, but we are going to teach guys to be able to do other things and, you know, play in our schemes. And we'll try to, you know, bring all of those things out in him and work on his skill development. But he very much said, you know, we'll have to go out there and see what he can do, because he was doing this, and this is what he was good at, because this is what Miami asked him to do. And they didn't necessarily ask him to do many of the other things. So that was the general overall take of, you know, the old analogy of, you know, you got a piece of clay and you got to mold it. There's some of that there, but they did love his bump skills. And that tells me a little bit that you know, when Mike talks about, you know, red paint, painting the barn red, you know, let's not assume that the Steelers forever are going to be off and playing soft. You know, if you get bigger, more athletic guys like Artie Burns, and, you know, Sean Davis isn't going to be playing that role exactly, but if you get guys like that, then that maybe gives them the opportunity to do some things they haven't done because they haven't had those kind of athletes. So that's going to be interesting to see if and when he gets on the field, if they ask him to do some things that he did in Miami that aren't necessarily staples of the Steelers defense.
Do you think it's possible to rush a corner along too soon?
Well, I guess it goes.
Based on what he did and how young he is, and I mean, let's face it. I mean, okay, we it's easy to circle a number like 65% of the snaps, and obviously, I don't have the count on what he played the year before that. But I mean, this guy really hasn't played a lot of college football at the position. So with that said, is it easy to rush a guy like that along too quickly and then have his confidence?
Well, I mean, you know, we got the example. I mean, you just look at Cortez Allen, and, you know, I don't know that they rushed him. He lost his confidence, and then his technique broke down because he lost his confidence. He became a grabber, and you know, then he was injured, and we know the rest of the story. So
Would you be more apt just to throw him out there in week one or anyway?
I wouldn't, because I like Cockrell and I think Golson's going to be on the field. But I do like the idea. I think the Bud Dupree model is the model now, and the Jarvis Jones and the Ryan Shazier model. You don't necessarily have to write him down as your first team corner, but I think having a guy sit or stand on the sideline for the entire season is crazy. You're going to have to put him out there. And if it's 10 snaps, that's great. You know, the first game he plays 10 snaps, first four games he plays 10 snaps each game, that would be great. Put him in a situation when you're going to go nickel or dime, put him out there, make sure he knows his role, and get him on the field. So, you know, that'll be good in the preseason. We'll get to see what he does. And it'll be good to watch he and Davis. It really will be fun to watch those two guys in the preseason to see if they understand what they're doing out there and what they're asked to do.
I think now, and it'd be interesting to hear this out of the horse's mouth, talking about Art Rooney II. If the team, Kevin Colbert and company, have more pressure now to get these first round picks on the field, especially defensive first round picks, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You know, and that's why I think, even though part of me wants to go, oh man, Artie Burns is probably only going to play 150 snaps this year. That's my old school kind of mentality, and you know, I think we saw last year. Let's make no mistake, Bud Dupree's rookie season wasn't great.
No, and I don't know if anybody's calling it great, but I would like to disabuse people of that notion. It was average.
At best, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but they still managed to do what?
Win 11 games, go to the playoffs. So, you know, he got some experience, and you just hope that, you know, he's not Jarvis Jones trajectory, because, you know, Jarvis Jones dealing with some injuries and stuff, but, you know, we've just never seen progress. Look, he plays the run okay. They didn't pick up his option. We've talked about that, but we just have not seen. I said to somebody, in his career, maybe he's made 15 plays. And they said, well, that's not bad. It's not good either.
I think they're going to get Artie on the field, obviously, and we covered it at some point. It's just a matter of how quickly they're able to do that. I like Sean Davis' ability to progress faster, because I think he's seen more. Playing corner and playing safety at the collegiate level. I think he's probably the smarter X's and O's guy of the two right now as well, too, because obviously he was able to dedicate his offseason to football, whereas Artie Burns was running track as well. So I think they're going to be able to get both these guys on the field sooner rather than later. But with that said, we, you know, we're still tempered on the amount of total snaps. You think you caught Colbert by surprise with that 65% number with Artie Burns?
I wouldn't say surprise. I mean, like I said, he doesn't need to have that number in his back pocket. I think he answered the question.
Would you want that number in your back pocket as a GM?
Maybe. I mean, I think he had a good sense. I think he has a very good sense of who Artie Burns is. So if he didn't, then that would concern me. But I, having had dinner with him, you know, gone to his pro day, you know, watched him on the field, talked to his coaches, I don't think Kevin's missing anything. So that the fact that he didn't have a stat doesn't bother me.
All right. You mentioned Jarvis Jones. The team obviously didn't pick up the fifth-year option. Neither one of us are shocked by that. But you asked Kevin Colbert about that and kind of moving forward with Jarvis. And in so many words, even though he left open the opportunity to sign Jarvis to a long-term extension, both of us would be surprised if that happened by the start of the 2016 regular season.
Absolutely.
Right?
He covered all the bases like he should. He said, you know, open to an extension. If he blows up and has a great year, it's good for him. It's good for us. He's going to get paid either by us or somebody else. We have options. It gives us flexibility. We can franchise him. Obviously, Steelers, you know, can gain a compensatory pick if he signs elsewhere. So this seemed like the right thing to do. The doors are still open for business, but you're not committed to $8.4 million to an average outside linebacker.
Yeah, and how surprised would you be if Jarvis, isn't wearing a different uniform next year?
Zero.
Or 2017.
Yeah, zero.
Okay, yeah, I'm with you there as well, too. What else did I want to hit on here?
The cap. How about them managing the cap and him saying, you know, I just told the story that we tell on the podcast seemingly every, you know, 2 weeks about the national narrative being the Steelers are in bad cap shape and them not having to do any restructures. And he said, you know, if we can do it the way we do it and we can, you know, keep things in the current year, then that's what we want to do. And so far this year, that's what they've done.
Yeah, and there's a good chance that they won't have to restructure. You know, depending on how these things lined up, there's a decent chance that, you know, with a DeCastro extension, and if they're able to extend Lawrence Timmons, and you know, there's a good chance. And of course, you know, you get into late in the training camp and the possibility of Sean Swisham being cut and saving some money there. They might get out of this without doing any restructures. And when's the last time we've seen that?
Never. I mean, you know, never in my you know, paying attention lifetime.
And obviously it's there should they need injury money or whatnot, you know, with a guy like Cameron Hayward be the most likely guy to go to right now, first on the list, in my opinion. Let me ask you this, a little bit of conversation stemming from this, from me kind of writing a couple of times that there's a chance a guy like Arthur Motes might be playing his last year in Pittsburgh, even though he's under contract through the 2017 season. Would you care to speculate, you know, do you foresee Arthur Motes being on the 53-man roster in 2017?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah. I think
and it's just because of the fact that Jones
Harrison.
James Harrison.
They're gone. Like, they're all gone. He's not expensive. He's a great guy. He's a good person. He can play special teams. He does play special teams. And he's a more than adequate backup, and he's still pretty young. So, yeah, I would re-up Jarvis Jones to another 2 or 3 year deal, kind of at the same price they did.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I said Arthur Jones. Arthur Motes.
Yeah, but I just keep throwing out there that people should probably not be surprised if Arthur Motes wound up being not making that 2017 roster. That obviously what's going to play into that is how Ciccolo, Feeney, and all progress as well too. Now, obviously, based on what you see right now, you could definitely if I said a percent chance that this team's going to draft an outside linebacker. Let's quantify it as an edge rusher in the first round next year in 2017. What percentage chance would you give that?
Sorry, ask me again.
What percentage chance would you put on the Steelers drafting an edge rusher in the first round in 2017?
Oh, 40. 30?
That
I mean,
low?
I guess 30, 40. I mean, well, just because, you know, give me the first three rounds and I'll give you 100. So, you know, to how the board breaks and everything else. But, yeah, it'll be – we can already talk about the priorities next year. It's going to be edge rusher, defensive lineman, and wide receiver. I mean, that's where you're going next year, you know, assuming that you get something out of the corners that you have. The defensive backs, the three defensive backs, and we'll throw Doran Grant in there, four defensive backs that you've taken in the top four rounds the past 2 years. Assuming you get something out of that, you got edge rusher, you're going to have defensive lineman, and you're going to have wide receiver. Those are going to be your priorities next year. And then probably what? Running back.
Well, you know, Timmons, too. If they don't extend him, what are you going to do there?
Yeah, I know. I actually, you know what I think about this. I would love to have Jalen Smith have gone to the fourth round and drafted him and have him be Timmons' replacement. But good for him that he went where he did. That's great. Miles Jack, too. I mean, who are the Jaguars? My goodness. Malik Jackson, Gibson, the safety from Cleveland. They get the kid from Clemson, the number three pick overall last year back, and they get Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey. I mean, goodness gracious, man. The Jaguars might – I mean, if you're a Jags fan, the eight of them down there are going to be rejoicing.
Potential is a dangerous word, right? It has two sides to it, unfortunately.
Yeah. What's Fowler's first name? Jackson?
Dante, right? Fowler. Out of Florida. That was out of Florida. You said Clemson.
Oh, yeah, I did say Clemson. He's Florida. Yeah. Dante Fowler.
Okay. I think we put a pretty good bow on all of that. Do you have anything else to add before we
Good luck with the move, man. And we're gonna take a week off.
Yeah, we're going to go dark for at least a week. I don't know. I mean, I'll have my computer by next Monday, I'm sure. Well, I will have that because that's traveling in the car with me. But
Monday week.
Monday week. We'll see how it goes. But, no terrible podcast on next week for sure. We're going to have to play the following week by ear. Pray for me. This is such a long drive across country. We'll see how it goes here. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, we'll read down a whole list of donators when we get back on the air again with our next show. If you want to do that, go to SteelersDepot.com. You can find the donate button in the navigational bar. A few people have done that over the course of the last few weeks, and we certainly do appreciate that as well, too. David, as of right now, I'm going to give you at least 1 week off from the Terrible Podcast.
All right. Well, listen, man, safe travels. Good luck with the packing this weekend and all of that stuff. We'll all be thinking about you. Give me the updates on the road, and we'll catch up again soon.
All right. Get us out of here.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.